is Polyphonic Press, the podcast where two music fans pick a classic album completely at random. Using the patented random album generator, they are given an album to review from a curated list of over 1,000 classic releases, spanning multiple genres. And now onto the show. Here are your hosts, Jeremy Boyd and John Van Dyke.
Hey, welcome to Polyphonic Press. I'm Jeremy Boyd.
And I'm John Van Dyke.
And let's not waste any time. We've got the patented random album generator right in front of us here. So let's hit the button and see what album we're going to be listening to this week.
The album you will be reviewing this week is Hot Rats by Frank Zappa.
Oh, that's a good one.
All right. All right, so here's a description of the album. It says, Hot Rats is the second solo album by Frank Zappa, released in 1969. A groundbreaking fusion of rock and jazz, the album is mostly instrumental, featuring intricate compositions, virtuosic musicianship, and extended improvisations. It is widely regarded as one of Zappa's most accessible works and a pioneering album in jazz fusion. The album's six tracks highlight Zappa's innovative guitar work, particularly on the standout track, Willie the Pimp, which features the only vocal performance on the record delivered by Captain Beefheart. Other tracks, like Peaches on Regalia, showcase Zappa's intricate arrangements and use of studio techniques to create lush, multi-layered compositions. Featuring musicians like violinist Don Sugarcane Harris and multi-instrumentalist Ian Underwood, Hot Rats is a masterclass in blending rock energy with jazz complexity. The album's advanced production techniques, particularly Zappa's early use of 16-track recording, give it a rich, dynamic sound. Over the years, Hot Rats has become a cult classic and a key influence on progressive rock, fusion, and experimental music. All right, so the album was released on October 10th, 1969. The genres are jazz fusion, blues rock, and instrumental rock. And it was released on Bizarre Records and Reprise Records and was produced by Frank Zappa. If you're listening to the album along with us, we pause halfway at the halfway point to discuss what we've heard so far, and we highly encourage you to listen along. It makes the experience way better. And to make it easy, we've linked the album on Spotify and Apple Music, so you can check it out on your preferred streaming service. And while you're here, don't forget to follow the show so you never miss an episode. And if you want early access, head on over to our Patreon. You'll get these episodes the day before they go live. Plus some extra perks, depending on your tier. You can even get a shout out during these episodes and pick an album for us to review. And also be sure to check out the websites. You can listen to all of our past episodes and stay up to date on everything happening with the show. And without further ado, here is the first song on the album, Peaches on Regalia. So here we go. Okay, and ending side one with Son of Mr. Green Jeans. Yeah, this is really cool so far. I never really... the only time I've ever really listened to Frank Zappa was the last album that we did with the Mothers of Invention. And yeah, I didn't really know that much about him. And I didn't really know that much about the music that he makes. But this is like really... This is like really interesting.
This is a little bit more jazz oriented than the previous album, but he always sort of dabbled in that. So
he's this weird character in music, and I don't know why I never paid much attention to his music, but I'm kind of regretting that because this is something that's kind of more. This is really like up my alley, really. It's sort of that, like, it's got that sort of Grateful Dead sort of jammy quality to it. Definitely more jazz oriented, though. Yeah, there's something about it that it's just like I'm really getting into it. And I'm finding myself almost in a way, in the same way is like the Kraftwerk album, where it's more like sort of putting me in like almost like a trance or something like that. It's really I don't know, it's hard to explain. It's almost like I'm relaxing into the music.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, I know what you mean. Yeah, a lot of instrumental music can do that. Not all the time, and it doesn't even have to be instrumental, but it's definitely a talent to have to create music that can put someone in that sort of a space, headspace.
It's also interesting too, like I've heard of people, musicians, like auditioning for Frank Zappa's band, and how he has like really sort of, it's almost annoying in a way where he has like very rigid rules of what you must be able to do in order to be in the band. Like there's the infamous black page that when he auditions musicians, that you have to be able to sight read this page with like basically just notes upon notes upon notes upon notes, and you have to be able to play what is written on the page. And if you can't, then you don't get in the band. So that I think obviously he was very successful at what he did, and he's very he had a really good career in what he did, but I would find that annoying.
Well, I'm not one for sight reading music, so I just wouldn't be in the band.
No, exactly.
But
as speaking as a band leader, like I wouldn't want the musicians in my band to have to do that, because I think part of my frustration with a lot of classical musicians, I find, is they can't really improvise. And I get that it's a totally different thing. But I feel like with like rock and pop music, you sort of have to loosen your definition of what a musician is. And you can't really be so rigid of, oh, the music, they must play this, and they have to play exactly what's on the, on the page, but also have to be able to improvise. I don't know. It just feels too constraining. It's like too restrictive to me.
Well, I know for Frank Zappa, he basically required you to be able to do both. Yeah, you had to be able to read the black page and also be able to improvise on command, sort of.
Yeah, that is true. And, you know, it definitely gets results. I am into it. I'm just not sure if the approach is something that I agree with. But like I'm not saying it doesn't, like he was very successful at what he did, and a little bit of it is like, who am I to say that that's necessarily right or wrong? I'm just saying, for me, if I were to put a band together, I don't think I would take that approach.
Well, I'd be sort of going in a little bit of a different direction anyway. Not that some of his influence wouldn't leak in, but
you know, in this album, I mean, it's I like that the jamming doesn't feel aimless, if that makes sense. Like it doesn't feel like it's not going anywhere. It sort of builds upon itself, and I really like that as well. I mean, I think it's it's hard to tell. To me, it's hard to tell like what is improvised and what is sort of planned out. And I think, you know, maybe I'm being a little too harsh, but it's that's sort of the mark of a great composer and a great band, is being able to not tell what's improvised. Sort of in a similar way to like a great movie. Like if an actor is doing their job, if they're like saying the lines exactly as they're written, but it feels like it's a genuine conversation, that's sort of when you can't tell if it's written or if the actor's improvising. That's sort of the same vibe that I'm getting here.
Yeah, I think I follow what you're saying. Yeah, I think that makes sense. Yeah, and conversely, sometimes when they throw in their own line and the movie decides to keep it, it's hard to tell sometimes that wasn't planned.
Yeah, no, and I think he's put together a really a great band. I'm just curious if anybody, like, this isn't with the Mothers of Invention. This is a solo album.
This is the first album of this sort of type. He would definitely revisit this sort of type of album lots of times in his career, but this is the first time he sort of did that. This is the first one after the Mothers of Invention, at least the first iteration of Mothers of Invention sort of was disbanded or whatever.
And he's playing with a guy named Ian Underwood, who he's sort of known for this kind of music, jazz, avant-garde, experimental rock. And he was a member of the Mothers of Invention. But this is interesting. I didn't know Lowell George is playing rhythm guitar.
Oh, that's interesting. Yeah, I did know that, well, some of the members of Mothers of Invention went on to form Little Feat, actually, with Lowell George and whatnot. So, yeah, I didn't know Lowell George was on this album, but that's really kind of interesting. He's a fantastic musician. I did know that.
Yeah, he's a great musician, great songwriter, too. And, you know, Captain Beefheart,
he's a strange fella.
That's putting it lightly. he's a very strange. I haven't quite gotten into Beefheart yet. I don't think I'm ready for Beefheart. But, you know, yeah, he's a very strange, a strange character as well.
Some of his stuff is pretty cool, for sure. The one album, Trout Mask Replica, is definitely a acquired taste.
In the sense that you have to acquire your taste back after having listened to it.
I mean, it's fun, but you kind of have to know what you're in for.
Yeah, yeah. You can't put it on during a dance party.
No, it's not anything like that. It's a little slice of insanity is what it is.
Yeah, exactly. You know, but this album, I mean, it pretty much got positive reviews for, like, this album wasn't a commercial album at all when it was first released.
I don't think it was intended to be.
No. But it, like, for the most part, it pretty much got pretty positive reviews. Like Rolling Stone gave it, four out of five stars. Like, it's a pretty well received album. Even, you know, the few people that reviewed it when it came out. If it were to be released today, though, I think it would probably be pretty popular amongst sort of like the jam band sort of crowd.
Oh, I think so. Yeah. You know, the neo psychedelic crowd too.
Yeah. Sort of like, I think it would do well with like Fish fans and that sort of thing. Yeah. Like a mainstream, like some albums like were sort of underground when they came out, but like in the 60s and 70s, but they've become like iconic albums. I don't think this one quite has. It has garnered a cult following, but I don't think it's really quite as regarded as, say, like Dark Side of the Moon or something like that, or Jimi Hendrix or that kind of stuff.
No, but amongst Frank Zappa albums, this one is pretty iconic. Amongst Frank Zappa albums. Maybe it's the second most iconic after the other one we did, Freak Out.
So I did manage to find a few facts about the album. It is one of the earliest considered one of the earliest jazz fusion albums.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was released, obviously, in 1969. Hot Rats is considered one of the pioneering albums of jazz fusion, blending rock, jazz, and blues influences with complex arrangements and extended instrumental sections, which is really interesting because, like, during this time, this is around the time when, like, Miles Davis was sort of getting more into jazz fusion and leaving behind the straight jazz. Like, this is around the time of like Bitches Brew and albums like that. It's the first extensive use of 16-track recording, which is really interesting. Zappa used advanced studio technology for the time, recording Hot Rats on a 16-track machine at TTG Studios in Los Angeles, allowing for greater layering and production complexity. Which is actually, that's really, really interesting and really important. So before the late 60s, getting high quality recordings of, especially live off the floor, was really difficult because you only had a certain amount of tracks that you could work with.
Yeah, you basically had to mic several things at once almost.
Yeah, I mean, you could really only have maybe one or two microphones on the drums, which, you know, is fine, but with the 16 track, you could have a full stereo image of the whole drum kit. You could have a microphone on the kick, on the snare, on each tom and the overheads to give a full, like I said, to give a full, like, stereo image of the whole drum kit. And you could have, like, two microphones on a piano, one on the high keys and one on the low keys, so you could have a stereo image of the whole piano. And that's really when recording, like, the late 60s, early 70s, that's when people really started experimenting with recording techniques. And, you know, what happens if, let's put a microphone at the other end of the room to capture the room sound. And that's when I think innovation in recording really took off. And it really was, because now we have, instead of four tracks available, we have 16. And it's like, oh my God, what can we do with 16 tracks?
Yeah, exactly. Technology has a way of pushing innovation. Sometimes it has a way of stifling innovation too, sometimes. Because now with, oh man, how many tracks do most modern boards have now?
Well, I mean, with Pro Tools,
it's an infinite amount. But I mean, even some of those Neve consoles had a lot more than 16 tracks on them, going into the later 70s and into the 80s and stuff like that.
Yeah. Well, with tape became thicker. So you could, like, I think the thickest that it got was 2 inches. So you could have like 24 tracks on 2-inch tape. But, you know, then what you could do is you could sort of mix down and, sort of, let's say, okay, we know that's what the drums are going to be, so you could take an empty track, record the drums onto the empty track, that frees up however many tracks the drums were recorded on, then you have, you know, you could just keep doing that, and you would have, like, I don't know, 24 times however many.
Yeah, well, that's what the Beatles were doing in the mid-60s, even.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So yeah, that's interesting. I didn't know that 16 track was that early. I thought it came later, like in the mid 70s. But yeah, and this album is mostly instrumental. Unlike many of Zappa's works, Hot Rats is almost entirely instrumental, except for Willie the Pimp, which features raw bluesy vocals from Captain Beefheart. It has an iconic cover art. The album cover, featuring a pink tinted image of a woman emerging from a pool, was photographed by Andy Nathanson and has since become one of Zappa's most recognizable album covers. And yeah, it looks like a magazine ad or something, with the simple like font on the top and bottom, and yeah, sort of minimalist.
Yeah.
And Peaches on Regalia became a signature piece. The opening track, Peaches on Regalia, is one of Zappa's most famous compositions and has been covered by numerous artists. It's often considered a jazz rock standard, which I can definitely see. I mean, that's, you know, that became, I guess, a staple at most of his shows after this. So yeah, those were some interesting facts I found about the album. But I guess we'll get back into the second side of the album. But before we do that, let's hear from our friends over at the Album Nerds podcast. So check that out.
Drop the Needle on the Album Nerds podcast.
It's just the Album Nerds.
It's just Album Nerds.
Join Andy, Don, and Dude each week as they discuss albums from themes chosen by the Wheel of Musical Discovery.
Heavy metal guitar virtuosos.
Double albums.
MTV Raps.
Punk rock.
The top 10 albums of 1986.
Uncover hidden gems, revisit classics, and hear fresh takes on your favorite records.
Exile on Main Street.
Some of what country music can do best is that storytelling.
This is a messy album, for sure.
I just want to hear Floyd in everything, I think.
Born in the USA.
And it sounds great overall as an album. I'm just not, like, moved by it.
The Album Nerds Podcast. Three guys talking music.
This is what we call freestyling.
Yes. That's what we call freestyling. No one else would call it that. Other people would call it find another podcast to listen to. Okay, so...
give it a spin wherever you find podcasts and albumnerds.com.
We'll now take a few seconds before we begin side two. Thank you. Here's side two.
All right, and ending the album with It Must Be a Candle.
Camel.
A camel, sorry. Yeah. Yeah, no, this was a good album. I really enjoyed it. I'm more familiar with, like, rock and more familiar with jazz, but I don't know a whole lot about jazz fusion. I just haven't listened to a lot of it, but I know it was very popular in the 70s. And, like, if this is considered one of the first, or if not the first, jazz fusion albums, I think I'm going to have to start listening to more of it, to be honest with you.
Yeah, this is always been one of my favorite Frank Zappa albums. It's just a completely different animal from some of his other stuff. At least the other stuff he did prior to this, which I like as well. Yeah, this is when he decided, you know, I'm really going to sort of showcase what I'm about and some of the other ideas that are going in my head and just become a little bit sophisticated and, you know, in what he wants to present to the world.
Before this, like I said, I never really... listened to a whole lot of Frank Zappa, and my perception of Frank Zappa was more like a comedy, like musical comedy.
Yeah. Yeah. He wasn't just that.
Yeah. Yeah. That was my idea. It's like, oh, okay. Frank Zappa does that. He's like, he writes, you know, funny songs. And yeah, no, the more I discover about him, it's like, oh no, he's much more than that. He definitely has a sense of humor, and I like his sense of humor. But listening to this, it's like, oh, okay, okay. And even this has, like, a bit of humor in it, like Willie the Pimp. I mean,
his humor is in the song titles for the most part in this stuff. Because, I mean, everything is, each song has got a little bit of a strange title.
Yeah, like the Gumbo Variations and, you know. Willie the Pimp and
It Must Be a Camel.
It Must Be a Camel. Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, it's, he likes to challenge his audience and, sometimes just for the sake of it, for no real reason. just, okay. You think I do this? I mean, listen to this and, you know, that kind of thing. He's a very interesting person. You know, and he definitely, he's very quirky, I guess would be the word. This is great. And as you said, like a lot of the musicians on here are like amazing. And a lot of them were in Little Feat Up, especially Lowell George. You know, I mean, I don't really know what else to say about it. I really enjoyed the album. And it's not a genre that I have listened to a lot. And so, but I did enjoy it. So what would be your picks with your three favorite songs on the album?
Oh, it is a tough one on this one for sure. Cause everything is actually really good, but I've always liked Willie the Pimp. The Gumbo Variations is pretty fun. Even though it's like, you know, almost 13 minutes long. It's just fun. I love the rock and roll violin in it.
Yes. Yeah, that was cool.
It was pretty cool. And I guess I'm going to go with Peaches and Regalia just because it's a classic.
I think mine would be probably Willie the Pimp, Gumbo Variations as well. And I also really like Son of Mr. Green Jeans.
That was a good one too, yeah.
Yeah, I think those would be my picks. So yeah, I guess that brings us to the question of, would you listen to this again?
I mean, yeah, I have it on record, so yeah. I haven't listened to it in a while, but yeah, it's good to hear it again.
Yeah, no, I would definitely listen to it again as well. I mean, I was pleasantly surprised, and I think I have to look into more of Frank Zappa's stuff, because, I don't know a whole lot about his music that he's made. I haven't really heard a lot of it, so I definitely want to dig more into it. But yeah, I guess we'll end the episode there. Thank you so much for listening if you made it this far. Be sure to subscribe and leave us a rating and review, because it helps out new listeners find us. And if you feel inclined, you want to help out the show, you can do that by going to our Patreon. Go to patreon.com/polyphonicpress. You can get a shout out during these episodes, and you can even pick an album for us to review. And no matter what tier you choose, you can you get these episodes the day before they go live. And you can also check out the website. Go to polyphonicpress.com and listen to all the past episodes, and keep up to date with what's going on. And I think that just about does it. I'm Jeremy Boyd.
I'm John Van Dyke.
Take it easy.